Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone. Today we have another Backer Rewards episode, but this one connects directly with where we are in the narrative. We're going to talk about Harald Hardrada, the King of Norway who died in 1066 at the Battle of Stamford Bridge. As some of you know, he spent most of his 20s serving in the Varangian Guard, and indeed became its captain. Thank you to listener A.T., who wanted to know more about Hardrada's time in Constantinople and beyond. Sadly, there's very little in the way of material to study with the Varangians. No barracks or dedicated churches have survived. The only physical evidence of their presence are a couple of runic inscriptions which have been found. The most famous is up on one of the balconies in the Hagia Sophia. Popular speculation has it that a bored member of the guard decided to carve his name into the surface for posterity. We can only hope he didn't do it while a service was in progress. Unfortunately, our written sources don't add a huge amount of detail, at least not about individual Varangians. Because they were not Romans themselves, they didn't seem to have sought out political influence the way that so many Praetorian prefects did back in the day. We assume that many, like Harald, came to serve for only a few years before taking their riches home with them. So the histories pass over them as an indistinct whole. Harald is one of the few Varangians whose life story we can actually tell. As Norwegian royalty, his life did interest historians, and he travelled widely, attracting the interest of contemporaries and posterity. In order to learn more about Harald, I turned to Noah Tetzner, the man behind the History of Vikings podcast. Noah has gathered together a superb array of scholars and interviews them about all things Northmen over at thehistoryofvikings.com. And he's just launched a new podcast, Stories of the Second World War. Stick a .com on the end of that to check it out, or hit up your app to discover more podcasting goodness. I will be interrupting to add more context as we go, but for now, here's the interview. Hello, Noah Tetzner, welcome to the History of Byzantium.
Thank you so much for having me, Robin. It's truly a delight to be here. I've been a fan of your show for many years, so it's a real treat speaking with you today.
Hey, very kind of you to say so. Well, I'm very grateful to you for coming on the show to help us learn about an important figure in world history who spent some of his early career in service to the emperors of Byzantium, Harald Sigurdsson, or as many know him, Harald Hardrada. So let's start with his early life and the Scandinavian world he was born into. What can you tell us about his background?
Harald Hardrada was one of the greatest military leaders in Europe during the 11th century when he reigned as King of Norway from 1046 to 1066. Now, a great deal of what we know about his life can be found in King Harald's Saga, which is part of the collection of Old Norse sagas about Swedish and Norwegian kings known as Heimskringla. King Harald's Saga, along with all of these Old Norse poems, Old Norse being the language of the medieval Scandinavians or Vikings, were written by a fascinating man, an Icelandic historian and poet called Snorri Sturluson during the 1200s. So about 150 years after King Harald Hardrada's death. Now, Snorri Sturluson, the man who wrote King Harald's Saga, is also responsible for writing a work of literature known as the Prose Edda, which encompasses a vast amount of the stories and tales of Norse mythology. So just a little bit of background to sort of the man who is presenting the work of literature that basically gives us 90% of what we know about King Harald's life. Snorri Sturluson had tremendous influence in Iceland during the Middle Ages. His family, the Sturlung family, was one of the most powerful. And it is also because of him that we know really anything at all about Norse mythology, anything in detail anyways. As presented in King Harald's Saga, the interesting portions of Harald Hardrada's life begin when he is age just 15 and Norway is experiencing a period of civil war. Before age 15, not many interesting occurrences in his life. I would assume that he had a fairly normal childhood. Perhaps the civil war that he was born into had some influence on his early life, but the most interesting portions begin when he is age 15, and his half-brother, King Olaf II, who later became a saint, was killed in the Battle of Stiklestad, supposedly by his own rebellious pagan subjects. His brother was a Christian. And it is during this battle where King Harald Hardrada gains his first taste of combat. As mentioned, his brother Olaf is killed in this battle, and according to King Harald's Saga, young Harald escaped from the battlefield with the help of an earl that was loyal to his brother, an earl who had land in the Isle of Orkney. They hid in a remote farmhouse in the forest, treated Harald's wounds, and then young Harald sailed east to Russia, where he stayed with a Russian king called Yaroslav. Harald stayed with the Russian king for several years, became commander of the king's defense forces, and traveled widely throughout the east. Along with some of his own men, he then decided to sail off to Greece, eventually reaching Constantinople, which is, of course, of interest to all of your listeners today. And in the words of one of Harald Hardrada's court poets, quote, "Bleak showers lashed dark prows hard along the coastline. Iron-shielded vessels flaunted colorful rigging. The great prince saw ahead the copper roofs of Byzantium. His swan-breasted ships swept towards the tall towered city." And of course, so begins Harald Hardrada's time in Byzantium.
So Harald was born around 1015, so 10 years before Basil II's death. And Scandinavia was starting to undergo the Christianizing, which so much of Europe had been through in the past couple of hundred years. His exile from his homeland comes at a formative time. When he might have been expecting to be groomed for power, he was instead out on the road, living a life closer to his Viking ancestors. Except, of course, that he was recognized as a royal wherever he went. So, as you just heard, he rolled up at the court of the Rus and was welcomed by King Yaroslav, who, in our next episode, will launch an attack on Constantinople. Anyway, Harald establishes a retinue for himself and decides to follow the path of many young Rus warriors by heading to Constantinople and joining the Varangian Guard. Harald was waiting for the political winds to change back home, and so he decided to go and enrich himself and see the world as a member of the imperial bodyguard. He arrives in the capital in 1034, so around the time that Zoe and Michael poisoned Romanos and took power.
He presented himself to the Empress and joined her army as a mercenary. That very same year, the autumn of that very same year, he went off on various naval missions patrolling the waters just east of Greece. He kept all of his own men together, presumably the men who fought alongside his brother Olaf in the Battle of Stiklestad, separate as a separate company, and a group of warriors known as the Varangians became very attached to him, and he subsequently became their leader. And this is really something that is seen consistently throughout his life, Harald Hardrada, gets involved with the military operations right away and becomes a leader straight away. Something that when he eventually became King of Norway, he became known as a great military leader. He became known as someone who is a very ruthless king, which I'm sure we'll get to later. But that is no doubt due to the early military experience that he gained at the beginning of his life.
It's not surprising that Harald was quickly promoted within the Varangians, because the Byzantines favoured foreign noblemen, men with the proper manners and education to do things their way. All the tales about Harald in Byzantium come from the Scandinavian sources, and many are quite fanciful, but the outline of his time there does chime with our narrative. Here, for example, in 1034, it's claimed that he was sent to fight in the Adriatic, which is what was happening at the time. These were the raids by the Sicilian Arabs, which the Byzantines put down, paving the way for the invasion of Sicily itself. I asked Noah to tell us about some of the other fantastic tales of Harald. The record seems to accurately point to his presence in Italy and Sicily in the subsequent operations, and recounts friction between him and George Maniakes, which is entirely plausible. George is, of course, the Georgios Noah refers to.
King Harald's saga provides a reasonable amount of detail describing Harald's time in Byzantium as leader of the Varangians. A military leader by the name of Georgios was in charge of the Byzantine forces, namely along the Euphrates River and in Sicily, during the time that King Harald was serving there. On one occasion, Harald, with his own men, including the Varangians, and Georgios, with his men, were marching over land and decided to camp near a forest. Now, Harald had arrived there first and instructed his men to pitch camp on the highest ground, obviously the best place to be during a potential attack. While this other Byzantine leader, military commander, Georgios, arrived with his men, and he did not like the fact that Harald had chosen the best camping spot for himself, and so he tried to order Harald to pitch his tents elsewhere. Now, of course, Harald was not about to be ordered around and told the Byzantine leader that the Varangians owed their allegiance to the emperor and empress and that they were independent of all military units. Obviously, they were mercenaries. Harald Hardrada and Georgios continued to become increasingly angry with one another until they came to the point of seizing weapons and were about to come to blows. Now, some of their men broke up the fight, and they agreed to throw lots in order to determine who would get to pitch camp on the high ground. When the lots were drawn, it was decided that the Varangians would take precedence in all matters of dispute, and many disagreements continued to arise between Harald and Georgios, but Harald always got the better end. So this is just one of the many fascinating stories seen in King Harald's saga, just describing his life and military engagements during his time in Byzantium. Another one that we can find in King Harald's saga also describes an engagement between the Byzantians and the Saracens. Harald Hardrada was often criticized by his Byzantine contemporaries for placing his men in the least dangerous area of the battle, or for keeping his men out of the battle entirely. As mentioned, this is, of course, due to the fact that the Varangians were mercenaries, and Harald was trying to avoid losses among his own men. However, he was not a coward and fought extremely well when the Varangians were on the receiving end of an attack. He was a very skilled military leader, and many of the Byzantine troops recognized this. In fact, they suggested that it would have been better for him to be in command of the entire Byzantine army along the Euphrates and in the engagements in Sicily, as opposed to the previously mentioned Georgios. He became extraordinarily wealthy due to the vast hoards of gold he plundered while in Asia Minor. So, middle-aged Harald, extremely rich before he was even king of Norway. While he was in Sicily, Harald did something remarkable, and I find this story fascinating. He laid siege to a large and populous town. surrounded it, only to realize that the walls were too strong to be broken down. He knew that the townspeople had plenty of food, water, and provisions to withstand the siege, so he thought up a plan. He told some of his men to catch some of the small birds that nested within the town and flew into the forest every day in search for food. He instructed his men to tie shavings of fur smothered with wax and sulfur to the backs of these birds and set them on fire. The birds would fly back to the nests inside the walled city, and whatever their nests were built upon, usually a thatched roof of some sort, which was made of straw, caught fire. Although each bird could only carry a tiny flame, one bird after another set fire to all of the thatched roofs in the besieged town, and a great fire spread throughout. All of the townspeople ran out of the city, begged for mercy, and Harald Hardrada spared their lives. So this is just another of one of the many stories presented to us in King Harald's saga, describing the many victories he won as leader of the Varangians. Now, if I may, I'll just talk about King Harald's saga for a moment. Now, this was, of course, I mentioned at the beginning of our discussion, an Old Norse saga, which was written by Snorri Sturluson, a Christian Icelandic historian and poet. King Harald's saga, along with most of the Swedish and Norwegian king sagas, Heimskringla, are often used as historical sources. There is certainly a lot of truth in them. Some might consider them to be slightly on the historical fiction end simply because one might suggest that the saga's author, Snorri Sturluson, was seeking to insert some of his Christian education when possible, or to simply write an engaging and compelling narrative. However, it is undoubtedly these sagas can undoubtedly be used as historical sources to some extent. One just has to use discernment, I suppose. But King Harald's Saga, you can find a copy on Amazon. I highly recommend it, and it's just filled with so many of these great stories, as my favorite one with the birds that were set on fire and released into the city.
As Noah says, these stories were written over a century later and seek to place the great Scandinavian leaders within the context of wider European history. That story about birds being used in siege warfare is one we see ascribed to other northern warriors in the sagas, so who knows where the original idea came from. Another story has Harald seducing one of Zoe's relatives in a castle by the sea. When her family become suspicious and come running to her bedroom, the prince slipped out through a trap door and swam to safety. Other tales have him capturing 80 towns for Byzantium and fighting a dragon, so, as Noah says, discernment is necessary. Most likely he did fight in the Bulgarian uprising when Michael IV recalled the Sicilian army and led it into battle personally. For those of you who bought last week's episode, the sagas also claim that it was Harald himself who blinded Michael V, which again is potentially plausible given that the Varangians most likely carried this act out. As I said earlier, in our next episode, King Yaroslav of the Rus will launch an attack on Constantinople. Again, the suggestion has been made that Harald, who would later marry Yaroslav's daughter, helped coordinate the assault, an idea fueled by the fact that he left imperial service around this time and returned north. It's worth saying that this is corroborated by the Byzantine sources. One of the magnates of this period wrote about his experiences, and he mentions Harald, says he fought in Sicily and Bulgaria, and left after Michael V's death. Harald returned to Kiev, and then home to become king. He'd been gone for over 15 years, and his family's faction was now back in power. He ruled as King of Norway for the next 20 years, and understandably gained a reputation for militarism and constant warfare.
Well, King Harald Hardrada is known for being extremely ruthless. He was certainly a wise ruler as well. He was by no means an extremely dramatic tyrant, but due to the military engagements that he had been an essential part of and a great military commander throughout his life, he was very ruthless. Obviously, Scandinavia in general was experiencing a time of great battle and warfare. One thing that he did as King of Norway is he led numerous raids on neighboring Denmark and some of the other Scandinavian smaller islands and ports. So he was really a great pirate. I guess you could say he was more of a later middle-aged Viking in that it wasn't so much, you know, a bunch of Norsemen grabbing their axes, spears, and shields, getting on a longboat and deciding to go somewhere. But very strategic raids. That's something that is a big part of his reign as well.
Harald lived in the shadow of King Canute's empire. Canute had briefly united Norway, Denmark, and England under his rule. So Harald's constant attacks on Denmark were a way of trying to destabilize the political leadership there and bring the area under his control. This career culminated in the event which has made Harald a household name in Britain, his death attempting to annex England in 1066.
In September of 1066, he sailed across the North Sea with a massive armada of about 300 ships. They came prowling down the coast of Yorkshire in northern England, which is where the Battle of Stamford Bridge happens. On September 20th, he landed with his army, some 9,000 men, and destroyed the northern army that barred his way to York. But 5 days later, on Monday, September 25th, Harald of England, Harald Godwinson, arrives with another army after a forced march of 190 miles up from London, and fell upon the surprised Norwegian invaders at Stamford Bridge. So the Battle of Stamford Bridge it's truly remarkable because it's where these three great military leaders collide. Yes, and these three military leaders are, of course, Harald Hardrada of Norway, Harald Godwinson of England, and William, Duke of Normandy, William the Conqueror. These three powerful and ambitious men who fought their way to authority in their respective countries, and they now all meet in the autumn of 1066 and try fighting for the greatest prize of all, which is the throne of England. Unfortunately, Harald Hardrada is ambushed at the Battle of Stamford Bridge when he is marching north in Yorkshire, and he dies. And his death, and this really is something to do with a small part of his legacy, the Battle of Stamford Bridge and King Harald Hardrada of the Norwegians' death really marks the end of the Viking Age as we know it. The Viking Age really ended when, you know, the Scandinavian rulers sought to create and rule proper unified countries. You know, before King Harald Hardrada, you had Canute the Great's North Sea Empire. With Harald Hardrada, you had more of a unified Norway. You didn't really have these, perhaps one might even say city-states, certainly chieftains ruling over, you know, jarlships and certain portions of land. But that's really how the Viking Age ended, with the death of Harald Hardrada, which is kind of sad to me because, of course, I love the Vikings and I have a history podcast all about it. But that's really the end of his life and something that goes on to become an essential part of his legacy is the Battle of Stamford Bridge.
And this seems to be Harald's legacy as the last Viking. The population spring that had allowed Scandinavia to pump out merchants and mercenaries for centuries had finally dried up, and states were forming at home in the wake of similar state creation in Russia, Hungary, Poland, and elsewhere, as we've seen during our end of the century episodes. Harald himself might have spent a life in statecraft had it not been for the civil war that saw him exiled in his youth and the opportunity which service in Byzantium presented. The sagas are full of warriors who returned home, very wealthy men from their time in Constantinople, and certainly coins, armor, and weapons from the Mediterranean have been found across Scandinavia. I closed our interview by asking Noah about an exciting product he's been developing, which is about to be launched.
Indeed, I would be happy to, and thank you for the opportunity to do so. So for all of you listening, obviously you know that I am the host of the History of Vikings podcast, and for anyone who is even remotely familiar with Vikings, you all know that one of the most fascinating parts of really the Viking world is Norse mythology, an essential part to the religion of the Vikings. Well, there is this primary source called the Poetic Edda, very similar to Snorri's Prose Edda, as mentioned during this interview, that is really the key primary source for Norse mythology. It's a work of Old Norse poetry, and it's where we hear all of these stories of Thor, Odin, and Loki. And I've just written a study guide for it. So my book, The Poetic Edda, A Study Guide, will be available for purchase via Amazon.com. Of course, if you listen to my podcast, you'll hear all about it. And it is a comprehensive, easy-to-understand study guide to one of Norse mythology's most primary sources. So for any of you interested in Vikings and subsequently Norse mythology, do be sure to check out that study guide. And I'm sure it will greatly increase your understanding for Norse mythology.
So go check that out if you're interested in Norse mythology, or if you're just tired of waiting for part two of Avengers Infinity Wars. Thank you so much to Noah for being my guest today, and thank you, listener AT, for supporting the show. If you're interested in a food and culture tour of Turkey this May, then check out thehistoryofbyzantium.com for more details. Sheriff Yanin, the man behind our Byzantium tours, is leading that one, and any foodies amongst you will love it, I'm sure. Next week, we return to the narrative as Zoe decides to get married again, and our new emperor will be forced to face down a Rus fleet, amongst other serious challenges. If you're thinking, wait a minute, what happened to Michael IV? Then go by episode 183 and find out. It's just $7 to keep the podcast going. But until next time, thank you all for listening.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.